Let me call to order the meeting of the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee. This is January the 8th, 2009. It's 9 a.m. You have the agenda before you. On behalf of the District of Columbia, I would ask that action item A be taken from the agenda. Objection? Hearing no objection. Action item 4A will not be considered today. Are there further changes in the agenda? Further changes in the agenda? Hearing none. Is there objection to approving the agenda? Hearing none. The agenda is approved. We have the minutes before us for December the 4th, 2008. Is there a motion to approve the minutes as if read?
So moved.
Moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Changes or modifications, comments on the minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The minutes are approved. Now we proceed to Mr. Francis or Mr. Cato.
It's Mr. Cato. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Good morning to you and good morning, members of the board.
Let me say to everyone a happy new year. We're going to have a very interesting year ahead of us, but we have great talents here, so we should be just fine. But I wish everybody a prosperous and happy new year. I'm sorry. And I have my protocol expert to my right. Thank goodness I do. And I do want to welcome most sincerely the new alternate member from the District of Columbia, Mr. Michael Brown, who is an at-large member of the Council of the District of Columbia and will be serving on this board. I believe the intentions are to swear you in on the 29th.
That's correct.
But we have invited Mr. Brown to be at the committee meeting today. He does not contribute to the quorum, nor can he vote. But we're delighted to have you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Hutchins. Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The purpose of the presentation today is to update the board on Metro's preparation for the inauguration of the 44th President of the United States, and to also to request authorization to create an all-day bus pass for the 20th of January and request the authorization to identify non-employee volunteers who have agreed to work with us on that day.
Now, Mr. Cato, I see we're not going to do Roman numeral 3. You're proceeding to Roman numeral 4. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Just so we can follow on our agenda.
Okay. Again, Metro has, we're doing our best to control the things that we can control. We're preparing our rail cars, buses, and Metro access vehicles. We're testing the systems by running over 880 cars to make sure that the power grid can accept all of the trains that we plan on operating during this inauguration weekend. We're scheduling extra personnel, and we're communicating by every method possible. And we also understand that we have to accept the things that we cannot change, particularly if you look at some of the closures and the roads of getting our employees to work. We're going to have to work creatively to make sure our train operators, bus operators, and support personnel will be able to get into the city. And as a result, we're providing parking at the Minnesota Avenue station just so they can have sufficient space to park their vehicles and use our system to get to work. And we also need to know the wisdom of what's the difference between what we can control and can't. The District of Columbia is coordinating the region's support for this inauguration. As you saw in the paper today, I'm sure some of you might have, there are significant road closures within the city itself, as well as the bridges coming in from the Commonwealth of Virginia, which is going to create very difficult times for people trying to drive, and that's why we're emphasizing use public transit, ride your bike, or if possible, walk to the ceremonies themselves. While we're in the final stages of our preparation, we will continue to work with changes in circumstances. For an example, we found that the demand for charter buses at our parking structures in remote areas was not as high as we anticipated, and there was a request from the Secretary of Transportation in the state of Maryland to provide additional auto parking. And as a result, we have stopped accepting additional permits for the charter bus parking, and we will provide more auto parking as well as enhanced bus services. As far as our lots are concerned, for safety purposes, private vehicles transporting more than 15 people will not be permitted into the metro parking drop-off area unless those vehicles are public transit operators, our partners in both Virginia and Maryland. They will be able to use our structures as they do today. There will be an increased number of vehicles in each one of those operators, as well as the metro metro operations themselves. From a security standpoint, all metro transit police officers will be on duty that day. All vacations have been canceled, and all officers will be on 12-hour shifts. In addition, we'll have more than 100 additional officers representing 14 transit agencies from around the United States, primarily the eastern part of the United States. And the region's local police departments are working with us to support us at the metro rail stations themselves. In addition, we're receiving support from federal law enforcement. What to expect from Metro Bus, Metro Rail, and Metro Access in January 17th through the 23rd? Let me first start with the 17th, which we perceive in talking to the Inauguration Committee as well as the Airport Authority and others is a travel day into this area for people coming from across the world. The airports will be busy. All local roads are expected to be open for traffic. However, we expect a high volume of traffic. While there's no special events scheduled for the public in that day, we do realize that the President and Vice President-elect will be visiting Philadelphia, Wilmington, Delaware, and Baltimore. And as a result, we will add additional bus services every 15 to 20 minutes departing from Dulles Airport as well as Marshall BWI Airport because, again, of the increased crowds that we expect to come. And we're working with the airports to ensure sufficient information is there to the traveling public. Our buses will follow a Saturday schedule as well as the rail system, but we tell the public to expect some delays if the roads are crowded, which will impact the bus system itself. From a rail standpoint, we know we have sufficient capacity and we will have backup capacity as necessary. Metro Access, we have the regular service, again, but if the roads are crowded, there will be delays, and we will have approximately 60,000 parking spaces, which are free on that Saturday. On Sunday, January the 18th, for the opening ceremony, most local roads, again, will be open to vehicle traffic, but we expect some restrictions on the roads near the ceremony itself. The President and Vice President-elect will attend. There will be events at the Lincoln Memorial, which are free to the public. In addition to that, we will provide, from our perspective, we will provide extra services from the airport as needed, additional buses to the ceremonies. However, there will be some restrictions on how close we can get to the ceremonies, and we are updating those maps, and we'll provide those maps on the website as well as in print prior to Sunday the 18th. Metro Rail operations will operate similar to July 4th. We have additional trains available for after the opening ceremony, and we will have the reduced fare. It's an off-peak fare all day for Sunday the 18th. Metro Access, again, regular services and free parking at our remote and parking remote Metro Rail locations. On Monday the 19th, it's the National Day of Community Services to honor the birthday of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and also additional preparations for the inauguration. There will be special events that day at the Verizon Center. It will be a youth concert. It's free, but tickets are required. So we will provide necessary staffing at the Verizon Center and other locations to ensure that the increased customer load understands what needs to happen and to ensure that we have the proper level of services. The Metro bus will run on a weekend schedule. And again, we will have backup services if necessary. The Metro Rail will run on a Saturday schedule with off-peak fares. And again, the information here is not correct, and I corrected it on my presentation. There will not be rush hour fares on Monday. Metro Access, we have regular services, and again, parking will be available for free that day. However, all cars must be removed from all Metro lots by 10 p.m. on Monday, the day before the inauguration. We will not allow people to spend the night or the camp at the Metro sites. We need those spaces for the services on the 20th, and so we will have brochures and signs at all the stations informing individuals who utilize those parking facilities that they must be out of there by 10 o'clock p.m. So that is a restriction for Monday night. On Tuesday, which will be the day of all days, again, if you looked at the closures, fortunately, from a transit perspective, we will be able to use all of the bridges, the majority of the bridges coming in from Virginia, as well as some special lanes and roadways coming into Washington from all over the region, which will help us provide the extra bus services that we planned for that day. The normal services will run on a modified Saturday schedule, which is an increase from the Sunday services or holiday services that we normally operate. In addition, we will supplement 22 dedicated routes to the downtown core with enhanced service, and we have a map to show that. We did review this with the Riders Advisory Committee last night. There will be shuttle services from RFK to LaFont Plaza, and the reason for that is that thousands of charter buses are scheduled to be parked at the RFK station. We do tell individuals to expect delays, even though there will be traffic mitigation on all the major corridors. It will not take very many cars to block up the roadways or pedestrians walking in those roadways. We are, again, working with the city administrator for the District of Columbia, who has been helping us in planning our bus services. From a Metro Rail standpoint, it will be 17 hours of rush hour services. We expect the highest ridership history of this agency by far for this day. We will begin our operations at 4 a.m. in the morning until 2 a.m. The following morning. The Smithsonian and the archive stations will be closed from 4 o'clock a.m. until after the parade, and expect that some p.m. closures at selected stations as the Secret Service informs us of the route of the President. The President moves through Pennsylvania Avenue. We will delay services until he gets beyond our subway tunnels and then reopen those stations. From the bus standpoint, we're again operating every vehicle that we have available, and we have partnered with the other operators in the region who are also operating additional services. We expect the buses to help relieve some of the loads on the Metro Rail system, as well as to provide transit options to the residents who are close in to the inauguration. As the trains get closer to the downtown core, we expect that they will be fully packed, even though we're doing gap trains, scheduling trains at different locations. We want to make sure that all residents in this region, especially those impacted greatly in the District of Columbia, will have transit services available to them to get down to this important celebration. Metro Access, again, will work, but expect delays in the entire metropolitan area. And it will be limited door-to-door services, particularly in the downtown core, because of restrictions on the ability of us to stop and being able to pick up people. From a parking standpoint, we will have 60,000 parking spaces available for $4 in cash, and the lots will open at 3:30 a.m. but we expect for those lots to fill up quickly. And I want to emphasize again, there is no overnight parking on the 19th to attempt to get a space on the 20th. Again, it will be a big day. The number of people who are going to attend, the number keeps shifting, and we'll be able to inform you of that number on the 21st. There's guesstimations, but we are gearing ourselves up to transport 1.5 million people on the transit system itself.
Mrs. Hutchins?
I have two questions, and one is on the Monday parking. Mm-hmm.
Just
and how does he expect to accommodate?
If we're going to start the closures at 10 o'clock, and so because we need to be preparing for the onslaught on Tuesday, there is that gap in between, and people just need to be mindful of that. As far as people going to work, you're talking about the in the evening then? Or?
No. Yeah. I understand.
12 a.m.
Okay. Yeah. That's an excellent point. We are going to ask people to be out by 10. It's going to take us time to make sure those individuals get out. If our services are still operating at that particular station, we will not take any action against the individuals.
So the towing, you're not saying you're going to towing. You're just starting at 10 a.m.
Yes.
to empty the lot.
Yes.
That makes sense. And so it will be open until service terminates.
Yes.
Okay. I have one other question. And it was regarding the fact that the necessity of stopping all of the vehicle traffic into the District of Columbia on the Virginia highways. I didn't see a PR piece in this, and I think what we really need to do is to heighten the understanding of how people can get in. We've already heard anecdotes of folks trying to figure out their ways, and what we'd like them to do is we have some good examples of how they can figure how to get in using an alternative of transit, bus, and rail at this time.
And that is a very good direction. We will begin to work on that. We wanted to know ourselves what are all the closures, and we can now move forward on detailed information of how to get to the downtown area, including walking and bicycling, buses, metro rail.
Well, let me say before we can proceed any further, you know, how much we appreciate the very detailed, talented work that you and your staff have done on what is preparing for, you know, probably one of the greatest challenges this system has ever faced, or maybe will ever face, in terms of the number of people who are going to depend upon metro rail, metro bus, metro access in terms of that particular day and the events leading up to that particular day. I think I can speak on behalf of all of us. You know, we've been involved in various meetings about this, and I've been impressed with the work that you've done. And it seems to me that you've covered a great many of the questions that any of us would have asked and been concerned about. I do want to ask, however, what is going to happen? What are we doing with the metro bus routes that are going to be impacted? What are we telling people about those particular routes on that day?
We are telling people route by route exactly where that bus would terminate and what their options are, and rerouting themselves if they want to get to a certain portion of the city. Because there are many people who still have to work that day. Of course, we're telling them to leave early, earlier than what they normally do. They're going to use public transit, whether the rail or the bus, and what the routes are. The specificity, we talked some about that last night, and there's some information in this brochure, but we will update it based upon some of the information we received today. Now, the buses will have the abilities to get closer to the downtown core than automobiles will. But still, there are certain segments of the city, like Pennsylvania Avenue near the Capitol, that we will not be able to operate the buses. And we will provide transfer information on our website, as well as printed information, and working with the media to ensure that it gets out to the public. And there was discussion last night, and we're looking at the possibility on the Bus Riders Advisory Committee to have tear-offs on the bus. you know, this is what's going to happen on the 20th, and if you're taking this route on that day, these are your transfer opportunities.
Do we know at this point when Pennsylvania Avenue is going to be closed to any traffic, pedestrian, vehicular? It's going to be impossible to cross Pennsylvania Avenue?
I have not received that information, but I'm making an assumption that it will be 12:01 a.m. on the 20th.
12:01 p.m.
A.m.
Midnight.
Midnight.
So from midnight on.
It might be before then. I was just told we don't have the official time, but as soon as we find out, we'll be able to communicate it, but we've not been informed yet.
So after that particular hour, then it would be impossible to cross. It would not be permitted to cross Pennsylvania.
That is true.
Yes, Mr. Giancola.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Cato, question on volunteers. What were the number of volunteers we're expecting, and then what kinds of jobs will they have, and will there be some designation that they're a volunteer, a T-shirt or something like that to show people that they are actually volunteers?
Yes, we have received some outreach from some of our sister transit properties, probably several dozen people who have expressed interest in coming down here. These are people who are familiar with the transit environment and are active in various organizations that we're affiliated with. And their role, just like what I call the civilians here, anybody in the support role on the non-operations side of the house, will all be the same, basically a customer service function as opposed to a crowd control function. And so they'll be the ones assisting people at the fare vending machines, in the stations, telling them what their options are, and basically giving customer service types of information, and following the direction of whatever the station manager and the police need.
Will they have any special shirt or something that shows their volunteer, a button or?
Sure, everybody will have a vest that identifies them as a
yeah. And how many numbers did you say again?
We have several dozen from the.
Just several dozen. Okay.
No, several dozen from other transit properties, and about 100 to 200 from various vendors and other folks who have expressed interest in supporting us for that day.
I still haven't heard a number, though. I mean, a total number of volunteers we're expecting to use.
Okay, well, I would say
100?
Let's say 200 for extra volunteers, as well as people who would normally not be working that day, another 200 of our employees who would be supporting.
The next question is more general, in a sense, for Mr. Cato. Were there any surprises when the Secret Service announced the bridge closures and all the other things from the previous plans we had made?
No, not on the bridge closures, no.
Okay, how about other things? Were there any other surprises?
Not from a transit operator standpoint, okay. Because we're able to go through and operate closer to the downtown area. I think from a pedestrian and automobile standpoint, I was a little surprised.
Okay, so we kind of anticipated what was going to happen, and it did happen.
Yes.
Let me, before I call on Mr. Benjamin, let me just mention that in terms of the volunteer energies, I would suggest that we contact City Year, because we have a contract which the District of Columbia funded with City Year, and that's a whole cadre of very energetic young people who could be well utilized on this particular day, and so I suggest that.
Thank you.
Benjamin? I'd like to follow up, first of all, on the question that Ms. Hutchins raised. Did I understand correctly that we will be towing cars from parking lots during the night on the 19th and the morning of the 20th?
Yep.
Or what are we doing in order to clear them?
No. Okay. The chief will speak to it, but I think that the question that I heard was, we're going to have service operating until midnight.
Right.
And would we remove cars before midnight or before the service ends? And we would not remove any cars before the service ends at a station.
Which is our policy.
Will we then be removing cars after that? Is that what we're saying?
We will be removing the cars from certain areas, but it will definitely not be before the service hours are closed.
So we will be
yes.
towing cars
yes.
out.
Yes.
One of the questions that Ms. Hutchins asked, what about people who work overnight, take Metro in and take it back out in the morning? Is there any, those people just will have their cars towed, they better not park that day?
Right, we're going to make them aware of the closures of those particular parking lots in advance.
And at what points will you be able to cross, physically, cross Pennsylvania Avenue on Inauguration Day?
We haven't been told that information publicly yet.
We were told that 10 o'clock the night before, they would actually close down Pennsylvania Avenue.
That's the answer.
Okay, 10 o'clock the night before, and the concern I have is, we basically have three different tunnels that we're using, which adds up to our 120,000 people per hour that we can move in and out on the rail system. One of those tunnels is the Red Line. The Red Line is entirely north of Pennsylvania Avenue. So people going to the mall to see the inauguration have got to cross Pennsylvania Avenue or have to transfer, and I think transfers will be impossible. When you get to Metro Center, all the trains will be full. There'll be nothing to transfer to. So the question is, if Pennsylvania can't be crossed, that means many of our Red Line stations will essentially become useless to the people on that line. What are we going to do? Because otherwise our capacity is now 80,000, not 120,000.
Well, from an operating standpoint, you're right, and that's one of the reasons we're that's the communications we get out to the customers. If you're trying to get to this point, here's how you have to do it. And they're going to have to exit the stations at an earlier point and be on one side of the parade. They cannot cross Pennsylvania Avenue, or they can route themselves around by using bus transit.
Also, the press release that was released yesterday from Secret Service indicated that the 3rd Street Tunnel would be open for pedestrian crossings, and so that will alleviate some of that pressure that you're talking about from
about
the north
on
side.
The west side.
And on the west side, there hasn't been any information about that.
So basically, at this point, the only stations we know that are close to the only crossing we're aware of are Judiciary Square and Union Station.
Those are the closest, and certainly, you know, this is why we're advising people to be prepared to walk up to 3 miles for this event.
Are we going to be doing something to prevent people from trying to transfer for instance, Metro Center?
Yes.
And are we going to be trying to encourage? They need to know somehow where those places are that are close to the crossings, because I don't think people realize that. And coming back is the same problem. What we're going to do is get an overload at La Fon Plaza because it's the only major station that they can get to.
Right. And we will communicate that degree of specificity over the next, actually just 2 weeks, a little bit less than 2 weeks, to our customers. You're right. It is going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge for us and our operations. But we've done this before. I mean, this is the 4th of July magnified, multiplied. But we're going to use the same techniques of doing that. In some cases, restricting stops at stations to prevent overcrowding, because we have to think of the safety first.
Are we considering things like blocking escalators and saying, no, you can't get from the upper level to the lower level of Metro Center?
We will control the escalators throughout the day because of the safety aspect of loads and to make sure that the platforms do not overload. And yes, that is one of the considerations also in order to ensure that we do not have this overload at Metro Center and other locations. We will have transit police with their support where necessary to block escalators. But again, we want to communicate that up front.
I do think we're sending also a message that that Secret Service has got to hear, which is it is incredibly important for the people in this region and for the visitors in this region to understand that Pennsylvania cannot be crossed at will, that there are only a few places, and they have to tell us where those places are, because otherwise people are just going to be getting off and moving towards Pennsylvania Avenue and be blocked. So we need to know early so that we can do our job.
Absolutely. Can I continue on?
Oh, you haven't finished.
No.
But since we've started with this interruption, we really have to be fair to the other members of the board.
And I want to be fair to all the members.
Yes. And I know Mr. McKay and Mr. Albert have questions, and perhaps Mr. Linton has a question or a comment. So let's finish this process.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions. On the security slide with the extra police officers and all hands on deck, is it to be assumed that's for the duration, that's all 4 days, each of the 4 days, or is that just the plan for inauguration day?
That's each of the 4 days, the 18th through the 20th.
And so can we assume that there will be a transit police officer stationed, at least one at each of the stations?
Absolutely. We've also reached out to the jurisdictional agencies, and we have commitments from them. So there will be a police officer at every one of the metro stations.
Okay, so there will not be a situation where we would have volunteers at a station without at least the presence of one transit officer?
Correct. It would not.
Okay. Second question is, we have encouraged folks to walk and bicycle for good reason, but we're not allowing bikes. bikes on the trains. So have we looked at the storage capacity at the stations, at each of the stations, to make sure that if people are doing what we've encouraged them to do and then they get to the station and can't bring their bike onto the train, what are they to do?
And that's, and that is something we're going to follow up with the different jurisdictions. I believe that the capacity is going to be filled very quickly at the stations, because we do not have large numbers of bicycle racks. And thank you for bringing that up. And to be honest with you, we need to go into more detail on that.
Yeah, good. Thank you. And my last question is financial. Have we gotten any more commitments from anybody to help offset the cost of our operations this day?
I think the best response we got, we understand you have financial issues. We have submitted our request for reimbursement along with the District of Columbia to the federal government, and all that will be worked out afterwards. Okay, it's a wait and see.
So the answer is really no at this point, other
right.
than there's an awareness.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Albert?
Mr. Cato, good morning.
Sure.
So this issue is an issue that the District of Columbia has been asked to raise with Metro on behalf of the Presidential Inauguration Committee, and it's with regards to Metro rail hours on both Sunday and Monday. As you may know from your interaction with the PIC, that there are a number of activities planned beyond midnight on both Sunday and Monday. In fact, there are 34 events, including some balls, concerts, et cetera, on Sunday night, and 41 events ending after midnight on Monday night, well into Tuesday morning. Question is, how do you recommend we accommodate what we perceive to be the increased ridership after midnight in the District of Columbia? Now, obviously, people have to get out of the city, and our concern is making sure they get out safely.
Well, from a Metro Rail standpoint, our plans are, as you mentioned, to operate to 12 midnight. And there have been numerous requests, members of this board as well as representatives from the District of Columbia and restaurant associations and hotels to operate later services. My recommendation has been, and my position has been, that our issue is maintenance of the system. We're going to be pushing this system way beyond what we thought we would for the next 15, 20 years, from the standpoint of hours of service, the number of trains that we're operating. I am concerned that if we do not have any hours to perform any maintenance in the system on Sunday night and Monday night, that we could have a collapse of the system on Tuesday. I think the risk level that we take by operating the extra hours of service could put us in a terrible situation. It is a system that, you know, requires a great deal of maintenance. Again, we're going to be operating more cars on Tuesday than we have ever operated on this system. And we're testing it from a power standpoint, but we're pushing the envelope. And I am not comfortable not having sufficient hours to ensure that that system will operate well on Tuesday. That's been my position. I'm just concerned as a transit professional from a maintenance standpoint about a system that we're pushing it. I don't want to push it beyond its capabilities and create a terrible situation for us in the 20th. I understand. I mean, from the standpoint, if I could have emotionally, I want to do it. Even as the general manager, I would like to do it. But I think that would be a bad judgment on my part if I do that, particularly in the advice of the maintenance staff, that we need to maintain the system as well as the cars.
So your recommendation to the PIC is?
Well, our recommendation is we will have some bus services and we can communicate those, and maybe there's an opportunity, if necessary, to coordinate some additional routes or charter services, because there are going to be many buses in the region that are going to be dropping off people and they're just going to be parked. And maybe there's some opportunities that and they will be able to provide charter services from various points. I don't know the answer, to be honest with you, of nothing that involved that detail in that.
Well, I would hope, Mr. Chair, that, and I do understand your concern, Mr. Cato, and I actually do share it also, but I would hope that together with the District of Columbia and the PIC, that we could arrive at a solution rather quickly, because this is an issue that gets raised every day with us.
Our staff have been working with them, and we will even work more closely and getting creative. We're prohibited from doing certain charter services. We can do certain routes, but we can't do charter services. But
can you explain that, please?
The Federal Transit Administration prohibits public transit agencies from performing charter services unless we have contacted every charter operator in the region to determine that they wish to operate those services, and they in writing tell us they do not wish to do it.
Yes.
Could you have done it 12 months ago?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman. We had Mr. Linton, then Mayor Ewell. Let's hear it. Mr. Linton.
Okay, I was waiting to see if there's any more questions. One of the questions I had, I think this deals with trial control with entry into our stations. I know that there's a lot of thought about that when we get down to the core, but at some of your faraway stations, such as Shady Grove, where you know platform availability is a challenge even now, and that will be an entry point for a number of people who will be coming to the region. Are we going to, if we work through that process, we're going to have sufficient number of our staff that will be positioned to control the entry into the stations so that we don't have crowding at times?
You're absolutely correct in what you're saying, and it's going to go in both directions. In the AM of getting the riders to the downtown area, and then the PM, we need to control the exit from the station itself to make sure people do not linger on the platforms as other trains are coming in. I have met with the transit police as well as our operating staff, and we will have personnel in both AM and PM at every one of those stations. And this afternoon, we're going to review the specifics of how many people, where, for each station, because you're absolutely right. We expect the outlying stations to be packed. We're going to have to do crowd control of those individuals coming into our Metro rail system, as well as some of the lines or stations as you get to the core. For an example, at Armory Stadium, 1,000 and something buses are going to be parking there. And while we're going to provide bus shuttle services, some individuals are going to, a large number are expecting to get on the rail system. We're going to have to be able to control those crowds. This will be, again, on the 4th of July several times over. And the techniques that we've used when the fireworks celebration was over at the 4th have to be put in place all day on the 20th.
I think that also needs to be part of our communication plan as we are talking what their behavior will need to be, and also what the procedure will be. If it's known that there will be some queuing up outside the stations, they will be monitored before they can proceed, so that, you know, I think the more we can inform the public on what the conditions are, they do a great job doing that, by the way, in terms of what to expect, you know, the slowness of entry into the system, and the kind of things that they need to be prepared for, the better that
Thank you, Mr. Linton. Mayor, you're...
Yeah, and I apologize, you may have already discussed this, knowing that, again, how overtaxing the system is going to be, and the experiences more recently with escalators or elevators not working, will those sites or locations where elevators and escalators have been problematic more recently, are they going to be out of service so that folks don't run the risk that they're going to use them and then, you know, they break down? And then I understand just night before last for over here at Gallery Place for a hockey game, the escalator stopped, folks were thrown backwards and everything else. And it's, you know, we don't need to have incidents and embarrassing situations if we have knowledge now of routine mechanical failures with, you know, systems, parts of our system. I think we just should, suggestion or thought would be you just keep them out of service. I mean, if we certainly, obviously, we're going to try to repair and make things as workable and doable as possible, but if we can't get to them, let's not risk public safety.
It sounds like you were at our planning meeting.
No.
Because you're right. In certain locations, the down escalators would be like stairs. But there will be up escalators because there are people who will have to, will have difficulty negotiating the steps themselves, the stairs. We will have personnel, not in the office, but out at the stations. It's going to be a full work day for all of the individuals who work on escalators. But we want to make this go as smooth as possible. I do not want to have a blemish on this agency or this inauguration because of those type of issues. And trust me, we're going 150% to ensure that we do the best that we can on that day. Thank you.
We haven't heard the end of the report, but is it, but I want to give anyone who hasn't spoken the opportunity.
Two things. First, kidding aside, I think the charter bus point is important because I do think it's important that people understand some of the solutions people would like us to employ are prevented because last year the federal government decided not to let us do that. So far it's affected, of course, people going to Redskin games. But now it affects the federal government's ability to hold its party and our ability to help them do it. And it's important people understand that. You know, that's a consequence of a regulation that nobody knew about because some lobbyists on behalf of some businesses got something through and all of a sudden has this consequence. And then people say, well, why isn't Metro doing this? Metro isn't able to do this because the government won't let us.
Yes.
And, you know, we need to understand that. The bus plan?
Yes.
And you haven't discussed the...
No, I've not discussed the bus plan.
Were you planning to?
No, I was not going to, but if you wish for me to, I can.
Okay, well, I will say with some things I have questions on, which it's not appropriate to discuss now, we can later, but this is a description of the corridor services provided for a number of routes that will be going all the way downtown. I think this is an important part of the effort, given the limitations you were just describing on our rail. What isn't clear from this is the frequencies of those services. We need to understand something about that. And the information and how this is going to be conveyed, since he knows about this now, and it's not part of your presentation in front of us, and how people are going to find out about the alternative.
Well, let me go.
This is the only thing I know of.
Right. Let me go from a broader global aspect and an answer, then I'm going to ask the staff to give you this.
Mr. Chairman, I believe everyone will find this under their book sitting on the table.
We're just really trying to follow you.
Just I wondered, you know, where it fit in the presentation.
And as of last night, this was, quote, a living document because we're still making changes to it. But we will have special bus routes, 22 specialized services.
23 on this list.
22 plus the RFK shuttle.
That's one of the ones that's in here.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay. The frequency of those services, well, from a communication standpoint, we designed a map ahead of time to show where the destinations were. As we mentioned before, part of the communications will be on the internet site, utilizing the local news media, as well as tear-offs on our buses. I'm going to ask our staff to talk some about headways because there are different headways, different areas, some based upon demand and some scheduled. Jim, if you'd like just to give a brief.
Yeah, the general principle is that we want to make sure that there is rush hour-like service from 4 a.m. to 9 p.m. To match what the rail system is doing. So we'll manage the services on these corridors to provide that. And, of course, as more people show up, we'll put more buses out so that we will be able to meet the demand on these corridors. And we want people to understand that all they need to do is walk up to the street and there will be a bus along very quickly and it will conveniently bring them downtown as close as is reasonably possible for us to maintain reliable service.
Okay, this doesn't tell me that.
David, the answer, yeah. We will provide
every 10
minutes.
Yes, we will.
Specific question. In general, 10 minutes?
In general, on all of these corridors, it will be no longer between buses than every 10 minutes. But we will make it more frequently as more people
are waiting
for the service.
Base planning is for about a 10
base planning is to make sure there's no more than 10 minutes between buses on all of these corridors.
Okay, so just to give some examples, you have a service, one of the item number 20 refers to a landmark. The Landmark Shopping Center, Andrea. And So from there, essentially, that's a place where the 7 buses and 28 buses normally stop. So it's using an existing route.
That's correct.
A route that wouldn't be necessarily run on a weekend or holiday normally, and wouldn't necessarily be run at the frequency we're running this, and wouldn't have the destination.
That's correct. The 7A starts at Landmark and ends at Pentagon, and it runs half-hour headways on Saturday. We would be dispatching buses every 10 minutes, and the intention is that that route would bypass the Pentagon and go straight into the district to the C Street Southwest terminal that we've developed with DDOT.
Okay, so I mean, I think this is really important for people to understand. I mean, this is a pretty radical kind of proposal for what we normally do. We're taking an existing route. We're saying it normally stops at Pentagon, but it's going to go downtown now. It's going to be running on roads that presumably, you know, it has access to without a lot of competition, because it's going to take the Shirley Highway
HOV,
which is going to be free of personal automobiles inside the Beltway, because that happened yesterday. So we can probably maintain pretty good headway with any luck at all. I mean, pretty good circulation time back and forth. And it's going to be run at a frequency much higher than it normally runs. They're 30 minutes, about 10 minutes or so. They're also going to be, there's a 7A and F, there's a 7W and X, and there's the 28FG, all of which are going to be doing that.
That's correct. The intent is there's a southern half to the route and a northern half to the route, and we'll try and get people on the HOV system as soon as we can to provide the quickest travel time.
Okay, and I understand that this is a working document, and over the next week or so you're going to be modifying this, but you can start giving people an idea of what's going to happen. So to give another one, again, I'm picking corridors on my side of the river. I know them better. But on the Columbia Pike Corridor, there's one route. We really have two sets of destinations for 16 buses, the Pentagon and Pentagon City. The Pentagon buses, one of the routes in particular, you're taking and having it run to the downtown.
That's correct. And I would be remiss in not pointing out that the regular Saturday service will be in place. So a person going from Culmore with an intention of getting off at the Pentagon, their regular bus will do that.
That's but the 16J, I guess?
The B or the J, either one. But what we're doing is providing buses in addition to that on a headway schedule that will allow people to have this through trip into the district. And as we finalize the information program, we may come up with a specific event title for that route, so it won't confuse people if it's their regular 16B cut or if it's a special route. We may come up with a special designation to help people understand.
Well, and that anticipates my next question, which is how we're getting information so people can understand this, one-time modification, providing a lot more service, but people need to understand how to use it. So, I mean, I think there are issues from what we put at bus stops, what we put on the buses, and I assume you're going to do something so that the one coming along that's going downtown, people know when they see it. But even more than that, I'm interested in what we're doing over the next couple of weeks, and specifically whether there's any thought. And I would advise everyone to take a look. I mean, I'm looking at the ones I know that are near me, but you got all the way around, the dial here. There are corridors identified here. Whether there's a thought been given to Mr. Cato about a corridor-specific outreach. So that, for instance, the questions I get are, I'm in Woodbridge. How should I be going in? I'm, in your Landmark or wherever. What kind of thought has been given to how we can get specific information in the corridors to people? There are local newsletters. There are no local email lists. There are papers that are more geographically focused. We're going with that.
After that list, we're going to contact all of them. I think that was good input to us. I know we're doing some, but I'm not quite sure the degree that we were leaning towards, and I will work on that this afternoon.
I think now that you're beginning to identify these specific services, okay, we have an opportunity to get some of that information.
Okay.
It is more geographically specific, because that's what people are starting to say. Okay, well, the folks outside the Beltway are going to have to do this. I'm inside. What am I going to do? And we now are starting to have something we can follow. I think that's good progress. And obviously, it's an ambitious effort, because normally changing a bus route is a big deal, and we spend a lot of time analyzing it, and we spend a lot of time preparing for it. You have to do it this huge change for one day.
Yes.
But I think it's the only way we're going to successfully move volume.
Let's proceed with your report. Before you resume, let me just say, in response to Mr. McKay's concerns about bicycles, that the Washington Area Bicyclists Association is providing free valet bike parking services at two locations during these festivities with the support of various organizations, including the D.C. Department of Transportation. And so I think we should hook into this.
Okay.
And since we're going to prohibit bicycles on our trains and buses, that we want to be sure that people know that these services exist. Mr. Albert, did you have something on this?
Yeah, I do have an update on the question of whether or not you'd be able to cross Pennsylvania.
Oh, yes.
Avenue. So there are going to be huge restrictions, but you can cross through the 3rd Street Tunnel if you get off at Union Judiciary or Gallery Place Station. And then you can cross west, I'm being told, of 18th Street for all other stations, and that's the latest we have. But we'll have updated information later this afternoon. So the 3rd Street Tunnel will be a conduit for folks getting off at Union Judiciary or Gallery. Every other crossing will occur west of 18th Street.
We do need to pin down the exact time when otherwise Pennsylvania Avenue will be shut down or any kind of traffic crossing. And
we're trying to get that information.
I don't think we have that yet, but we'd like to have it. Could we get it? I mean, can someone make a call or something? That ought to be known.
It's a Secret Service, but we'll make the call.
Thank you. Please resume.
Okay, let me quickly just go back one more page, please. Our work does not end on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. There are demonstrations within the city, and so we're going to have specialized services for those. If you can move to the next one. What I need from the board, and this will be something that we ask in the special board meeting, is a request for authorization for an all-day pass on January the 20th only on the bus system. The all-day pass will help us to more quickly move people, and will give people options if they wish to transfer or do other things. The pass will be purchased on board the bus. We will sell them for $5. Our customers still have the option of using their Smart Trip card for the $1.25 plus transfers. And they can transfer up to 3 hours, or the cash of $1.35. We recommend, after getting the input of the Riders Advisory Committee, that we set a flat fare of $5. The second authorization is the identification that we need for volunteers from other properties. It raises the issue of the liability and other third parties, and we recommend that we adopt a resolution that affirms that we would treat the volunteers as Metro agents for the purpose of this inauguration. And finally, as you come into the stations over the next few days, we have put up signs throughout our Metro Rail station that welcome people to the Washington, D.C. Really, it's interesting. This is the 44th president, but it's not interesting. It's logical. The 56th inauguration ceremonies here have been held at the Capitol. And so this picture will be in our stations, and it's large enough that people or tourists or even residents can have pictures taken next to it on their own. And just as an update for the commemorative card that we began selling just over a week ago, we've sold 26,000, almost just over 50% of the number of cards that we have. And we expect that these will be sold out by the time we get to the inauguration.
And I assume with people buying online that they're being mailed to them?
Yes.
So there must be a point at which you can't mail them anymore, they wouldn't get to them. Who for the person in Iowa who orders them at the waiter?
If there are any left over by the time they order them late.
Assuming that they've got a completed sale, but at some point you can't rely on the mailing.
Right, and I think on the website, we'll check this, but we will make sure that they know to expect a delay of expect that it will take 7 to 10 business days to get it, and then they can make that decision at that point whether to get it or not.
Days. So my point is just, I assume you either cut off those sales or you have some will call provision. I leave that to you.
Sure. Yeah. A lot of people are buying these for the commemorative purpose, too, as opposed to the actually using them.
Let me just see. Are you finished with your report?
I'm finished, sir. We do need to go into a special board meeting in order to approve the two resolutions. I'd be delighted to do that, yeah.
Right, but does
I'm done.
Yeah, I just want to make sure we're following our agenda here. We have a second round now on the report, but first round, Mr. Brown.
I want to thank you very much for your obviously hard work. I'm sure you're not sleeping too much. We have a lot of seniors in this region, particularly in the District of Columbia, who are going to rely on Metro access and will think they can just wake up on the 20th and make a phone call. What provisions are you providing? Is it a reservation system, or what are you suggesting for the seniors?
It is.
Not just seniors, of course.
Yes, it's the seniors and those with disability. We are communicating. We're communicating the message that's been given by the inauguration committee. Metro access will have every vehicle available. We'll take the normal reservations or the calls. However, there will be delays. There's no issue about that. It will take a long time to get to certain points. The inauguration committee has put out a notification to individuals with disabilities that it's going to be a very difficult challenge for them. From where they will be dropped off down on the mall to get to any place close to the inauguration because of barriers that will be in place. But we will provide the service. We will communicate the message from the inauguration committee, but we will respond to the demands that we're able to accommodate on that day.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. First round, anyone who has a first round. Okay, second round, Mr.
Yes, a couple questions. In terms of the volunteers, what function will they be serving, and what kind of vetting have we done in light of some issues that we are concerned about in terms of avoiding that of security with the Suzanne? What kind of vetting have we done with volunteers, and what actually role will they play in this process?
Sure. So the first question about the vetting aspect. No one comes into our property without first being cleared through our transit police officers. So we check everyone at that point. Beyond that, there will be training for the volunteers where we will talk about not just the customer service aspects of their job, but as well the emergency preparedness and the expectations that we would have if we have a situation that requires some additional assistance from them.
You said no one will come on our property until they've been cleared?
Yes, cleared, the individuals.
Cleared, or is that?
Initial basic background inquiry, yes.
Okay, and what function will they be serving?
They'll be serving primarily a customer service type of function. And so these will be the folks who will answer questions about how to purchase fare, distributing the brochures, kind of handing out whatever customer materials that we have available for that day, giving them direction about which way to go onto the mall, how to use the elevators, that sort of thing.
We want to use them also to free up our employees, so station managers and supervisors, to help with the crowd control. That will not be assigned to the non-police volunteers. That will be assigned to our employees because they have the experience in doing that. Just will free up more of our employees to be able to do more of that.
Mr. Linton, would you favor us with a motion on the resolution concerning the weekend volunteers?
I'll take a pause.
Okay. Mr. Benjamin?
I'm happy to move the resolution on weekend volunteers.
Okay. It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there further discussion on the resolution on inauguration weekend volunteers? Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. That resolution is adopted. Mr. Benjamin, would you move the...
as long as they can ask.
Yes, of course, but we'll have discussion.
I move the resolution on the creation of a calendar day pass, bus-only pass,
yes,
for inauguration day.
Yes.
Right. Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Giancola. Who was the second on the volunteer?
I second.
Mr. Benjamin, you have a question.
I just wanted to clarify what this says and what I believe you said in your presentation is that you still can pay the cash fare of $1.35, or you can pay the smart trip fare of $1.25, or you can buy this pass, which is $5.
That is true.
So it effectively, if you're only taking two rides, costs twice as much to get the pass.
Yes. It's primarily for visitors and others or people who not use our system who want to use multiple trips on that day only.
Typically, you would have to take at least three trips, probably four trips, in order to pass break even. So do we expect every use of this pass?
We hope so, yeah. But we won't know, again, this is one of those, we won't know until that day. We just looked at different options to make it easier for people to use the bus system and to encourage them to do it.
I think it's important, again, you know, this is one of those things where you give people information. They need to know that they can pay a cash fare that is substantially less than this, so that they don't buy this pass thinking it costs $2.50 a ride and I'm taking two rides, so I'll buy the pass and then find out that other people are paying half as much as they are.
We'll make that clear, because they have to take the action to purchase the pass. The operator will not be saying, here's the pass, you have to pay this. They have to request the pass, and we will have that information on the bus.
Okay. Ms. Hutchins?
I was hoping also that we were going to encourage people to find other things to do so that they can leave the area at more appropriate times, so they could use the pass more often. For example, everyone won't be able to exit at the same time. So go to dinner and see.
We will encourage them to do that and go to various museums within the region.
Is there further discussion on the resolution? Further discussion on the resolution? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The resolution is adopted. Is there further on the inauguration? I would like to just reference this very interesting highest ridership days, which is in your folder. This is quite interesting because of the 10 highest ridership weekdays, we have 8 of them have occurred this year, in 2008.
June and July.
In June and July. And so, and then if you turn to the highest ridership days on the weekend, you see that we have had only two of the top 10, actually, in this decade, in this century, and all others preceded it. So I think what you're telling us, Mr. Cato, is that you see this far exceeded, is your expectation.
Absolutely. It's hit being at the top of the list by far.
But also, the point needs to be made that with 8 of the 10 highest weekday ridership days occurring in 2008, you know, we are experienced with very, very high riderships, and the experience is very recent, and so we appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, if I can.
Yes, Mr. Brown.
It's interesting to point out, if you look at those dates, those are all kind of spring and summer. It's going to be a little chillier on January 20th. I don't know how that changes how people will operate and want to hover in the metro station.
And that is a good point, and that's why we're going to have personnel managing people at the station. They will not be able to remain in the station. Once the train unloads, we will escort them to exit the station, because if they did that, we would not be able to unload the next trains coming in. That's a very good point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any other comments or questions on the inauguration? If not, we will proceed to other matters.
Mr. General Manager, you talked about Port-a-Johns. What about the outer stations in Port-a-Johns?
That's where the Port-a-Johns are going to be, I believe, at the other stations. I'm not sure the exact location of that. I'm going to ask Jack.
I'm sorry, I don't think we have 150 Port-a-Johns, but I do not have a listing over here. We could do that.
We'll give you the listing. We see them primarily in the other areas, because there are going to be portable toilets throughout the mall and other areas. But again, you know, I don't believe there's any more available. I'm sure everyone in the region has been rented for this celebration. It's going to be tough.
We also have a restriction of only being able to put them on our property, too. So,
I will get that list to you.
Further on the inauguration. Okay. We want to proceed to the balance of our report. I have a question for you, Mr. Cato, before we do the operations, which is I'd like to have an update on the paper transfer elimination and what has happened to date on this, because this is something of great concern to a great many people. Can you give us the latest on this?
Yes.
So the elimination of paper transfers occurred this past Sunday, January 4th. And so as of January 4th, there were no more paper transfers were distributed. This week, our finance office is working with the social service agencies to ascertain their needs as far as the distribution of the next 50,000 cards that the board had authorized at the last board meeting.
How is it? Yes.
There were many issues that surfaced in the process. One is, of course, a large number of people waited until January 4th to buy Smart Trip cards, and at all of our locations, or many locations, we ran out of cards in the dispensers, and we had to go back and restock them several times during the day. There were long lines at our sales offices, including the administration building. Those lines have now dissipated, and they're very short. So thousands of people, and I'm not sure the number, have purchased the Smart Trip cards. There were some questions concerning seniors and disabled Smart Trip cards because the 50,000 that we distributed to social service agencies are only basic regular Smart Trip cards. And I've had discussions internally, and we are beginning the notification process. In order to get a senior or disabled card, you have to complete a form of certification, particularly in the disabled, to ensure that you're eligible for those benefits. And we will work, I'm not sure of the detail of the process, but we'll be working with social service agencies that they can provide that detail for us, and we would give out then the free card to the individual. Because just to give free cards, that say the disabled, is really half fair, as well as seniors, and there is a process to go through. But we're working out the details to minimize the work that someone would have to do in order to get that card.
As you know, I raised this issue.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm very concerned that this was not part of our planning, because there are real consequences to this right now in terms of seniors and disabled persons. I don't know what can be done to, I need to know what can be done to really accelerate this process. And, for example, in the District of Columbia, we have senior buildings where we could, with some effort, but we should be making this effort, because this was an element that was somehow really left off of our plan, you know, to do this, because these people right now are being very adversely impacted by this, the elimination of paper transfer.
I was just told that we'll work with DHS to get creative. We want to get as creative as possible in doing this, and working with them to distribute the cards. And I understand the urgency of it.
In the midst of all of the other things that we're doing right now, and I think we should have the D.C. Office of Aging very much involved. But something, I mean, if it just means simply distributing the cards for present purposes, you know, and without too much rigmarole or necessary documentation, might be a better way of putting it. I mean, I think we're going to be hearing a lot of complaints very, very soon on this issue from the disabled and senior community. And I'd like to think that we were doing something pretty dramatic at this point.
We will. I'm not sure of your definition of dramatic in mind, but
well,
we will.
Something that really does address this issue rapidly.
Yes.
These
yes.
folks are paying double and triple bus fares. They're getting cards that really don't accommodate what they're entitled to and what they're accustomed to. It's a very large issue in the District of Columbia.
And right after these meetings, I will personally follow up, but I've been assured that staff
can,
is working.
Can I have a report on this outside of the meeting?
Yes.
Okay. Is there further discussion on the elimination of paper transfers? Okay.
I just have a question. Since the elimination of paper transfers on two occasions when I've ridden the bus in Fairfax County, particularly in a predominantly low-income community, folks had their smart trip cards ready and they understood what was happening, but the smart trip card readers weren't working in the buses.
Okay.
So in instances like that, obviously, I assume everyone rides free, but what, you know, it's a concern of mine because I know we have this problem on our connector buses too, where we have smart trip cards not reading, and the whole idea of this was to prevent fraudulent use in some regards of the paper transfers. And so if people are riding free because the smart trip card readers aren't working,
We're losing more money than what we get before.
Exactly. Yeah. So I guess my question is someone looking at the breakdowns in those machines in the buses? Because I hate to say we're at a point where people are starting to use them and the readers aren't working. So we may not be any better off in some occasions. I don't know how frequently it is, but it's happened to me twice since the elimination, and I am concerned about the revenue loss related to that.
Well, I think statistically that's real significant if it happened to you twice.
Twice.
And I'm asking Mr. Francis to give a report on what the maintenance is on those systems. And we're provided back, but I will follow up on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion, Mr. Chief? Okay. Because we have, I mean, this is quite a crowded agenda for the board this morning because we also have a major budget report.
Yes.
Which will occur as part of the Finance Committee. May I suggest that we have an abbreviated operations report, just in the interest of that?
Very abbreviated, yes, sir, we would do that. We'll just give you the highlights.
Bus on-time performance for November was at 73%. That was up almost a percentage point in the previous month, and part of that was due to the fact that we had, next slide, part of that was due to the fact that we had about a 28% reduction in service interruptions from the previous month, and you can see it, or maybe you can see it better in your handouts, that our mean distance between failure went up almost about 1,000 miles, so that helped. Mean distance between failure by fleet, each fleet, CNG, hybrid, and clean diesel, all have improved and went up. Next slide. The rail on time performance average was 93%.
Can we get copies of this? I don't know.
You didn't have copies?
I think a copy.
Is it a binding? I have the.
I think it's in the.
Crime, I have.
I don't have it.
Is it any different
safety
than what was mailed?
I don't have it.
But is it any different than what was mailed out?
Shit.
The one that was mailed.
In the beginning. Have a screen? All right. Next slide. Peak period door malfunctions.
Yeah.
Everybody's in the front of the book.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. We skipped that item. That's what that one.
All right, you can see it at about 1 point.
General manager skipped that. Those of us who were here.
Okay, about 1.3% of the trains that operated during November experienced door malfunctions. You can see that was less than, far less than the percentage. And the same with the off-peak. Next slide. Right. Next slide, which is the major incidents. For the month of November, each one did better than the previous month. Next slide. Escalator elevators. For the month of November, the availability on the escalators was at 91.3% and 96.3% on the elevators. Next slide. Mr. Graham, this is the top 12 escalators with the lowest availability. It's a 90-day rolling period. Can't tell it, but in your handout, the ones that are shaded are the repeaters. One good thing about it, all these have been returned back to service. Most of them are heavy-duty repairs, which took about two and a half months to repair.
Now let me pause again on the escalators. I know various members of this board, myself very much included, have hammered away at this issue of science. And as you know, Mr. Francis, We recently have had an email exchange on the Columbia Heights escalator, which has been broken, with the sign apparently only being installed yesterday. And, you know, that tells me, Mr. Cato, and I've got to address this to you, that we still are not getting this this very important communication function mastered with our customer. And I think that you're copied on this email
yes.
string that goes back to December. And, you know, the escalator has been broken for some time without a sign. And I don't know why. We've had a very full explanation of what the problem is with the escalator. But for some reason, we just are not able to communicate this to the customer. So I'm getting this email from my constituent in Ward 1, wondering why it's broken, when it's going to be fixed, all of that. Those questions ought to have been answered by a sign. And, you know, having talked about this issue for years now, I'm puzzled as to why we can't achieve this. But now there's a sign up as of January the 6th, according to your email.
Yes.
So anyway, I just continue to. I don't know whether can you buy a sign machine? I mean, and make signs, and I think it also, you know, the better the information, and I know we're in a hurry to get through this, but just, you know, the better the information we communicate, the better our customer relations. And we had a very good explanation of what was going on here, just nobody knew it. So anyway, I don't want to go into this at length, but I just want to again make this please, Mr. Cato.
Yes.
Have a commitment to signs when we have escalators broken.
Mr. Graham, if I could, I would like to, I know in the interest of time, but I would like to talk to you about that same issue.
Okay. But it's the latest example. Thank you.
All right, next, Petro Access. Petro Access on-time performance is 92.5%. And the percent of missed trips is way below the goal of 1.5. And I always say that, you know, Metro Access ridership has increased anywhere from 18% to 20%. And I commend the Metro Access staff and still maintaining their on-time performance as well. Chief, are you ready to?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, let's
we have the security
questions that have here. Mr. McKay, Mr. Giancarlo.
Yeah, actually, what I'm looking at wasn't over because we had the bus on time performance comparison chart. And I, for one, appreciate the staff providing slide 20, which shows the REX on time performance. And unfortunately, it confirms what I already thought about our on-time performance on that route, which is one of the reasons why I've been resistant to support expansions of express routes. I mean, here we have an example where our express route is at least 15% on average per month worse off on-time performance than our regular bus routes. And so I've been consistently asking for what is the reason for that. And what can we do about it? Because if we're trying to promote express routes and limited stop, people would presume that that would mean on-time performance would actually be better than your average bus route. And clearly this chart shows that it's way off of what our normal bus routes are.
I'm asking Mr. Victoria, who's the Assistant General Manager for Bus Operations, to respond to that.
Sure. Good morning. We've been in communication with Mr. McKay regarding this and trying to resolve these issues. We have several problems on the REX line specifically regarding traffic in specific areas. And one of the things that we've done as of the 28th of December is that we have put additional service on there. Rather than having four trips an hour, we increased it to five, making the headway every 12 minutes instead of every 15 minutes. That should help in some of the overcrowding. Come the 12th of this month, we are having our scheduling and our planners studying this to see what the feasibility is of, at Mr. McKay's suggestion, taking every third bus and truncating it at the Huntington Station and then returning the trip. So those are some of the things that we're doing for this, specifically on this line, because it is a heavy traffic area. If you look in, conversely on the 16 line, you'll see the big difference there. So again, it's we're placing focus on this line specifically now that we know what some of the issues are.
I thank you for that. I wanted to raise it to the rest of the board's attention, who may not be as familiar with it, but you know, if we're going to make these express bus routes work, they've got to be on time. And so we need to continue to refine what's happening out there, because it's extremely successful. And yes, it's successful because there's a lot of patient people who are using this route because it's their only means of transportation. It's not a choice. It's the only way they can get around. And I would just say that just because it's not their choice and it's their only way to get around doesn't make it acceptable for the on-time Correct. Performance to be this poor. So I'm looking forward to continuing working with the staff to improve that.
And I agree. It is something we will work on, but it is an example of the issue of some type of special treatment or lanes for public transit vehicles.
And I hope in looking at this thoroughly, whatever recommendations come out, we can help you with, at least in the Commonwealth and in Fairfax, if it's modifications of signals or other things out there that we have to do, and we can partner with you to help on that. We need to know exactly, you know, what those are.
And just before Mr. Giancola, and can we see the Georgia Avenue Express bus?
Sure.
Record. Is our red light technology working yet?
It is, but we do have other issues there, such as traffic and.
Have the red light technology operating?
Yes.
I'm back to the Metro Access. The second chart, percent of missed and excessively late trips. We've got to develop a new chart there. It's a very confusing chart because it appears, if you look at it on most charts, you look like you're, you know, the 1, 2, 3 is confused. I'm not sure what that definition on the performance side really means. Mr. Francis, if you look at the left vertical column, performance 1, 0, 1, 2, 3, mm-hmm. you know, and then looking at the charts, it's assuming here we're not meeting a goal of 2% or 2 in the performance chart. So if you would, could you look at that particular chart? It's just doesn't seem to me it's configured right or looks right.
Is that clear? So we need to work
yeah,
out and,
what and
we're doing it.
If in fact we're having more trips, this is a percentage, so it does indicate a definitely downtrend. And I don't
yes.
you know, I'm just not sure how to interpret that.
Okay.
Because the percent should be, you know, you're basing on larger numbers anyway, so it's take a look at that.
Okay,
chart,
we'll take a look.
Further questions? Further questions. Okay, now we proceed to the next report, which is on public safety.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, other members of the committee, to you, Mr. Brown. The Metro Transit Police will provide a report on the last 5 years and the year-to-date for calendar year 2008 of the Part 1 crimes, which are felonies that are committed in the Metro Rail system. You'll see that aggravated assaults are down, and we project them to be down for the year. Larcenies are up, and that's something that's being experienced throughout the jurisdictional areas. Motor vehicle thefts are down. Robberies are up, as well as something that's been experienced through the jurisdictional areas as a result of juveniles stealing iPods, electronic devices, things of that nature. Next slide. We also have ranked Part 1 crimes according to the jurisdictions, and we looked at non-vehicle-related crimes versus vehicle-related crimes, and you'll see the depictions gallery place 44 crimes that leads the system in the District of Columbia. Anacostia, the majority of those are crimes non-vehicle-related. Again, a preponderance of robberies in that particular area, and it goes on down the list. Next slide.
New Carrollton, Largo Town Center in the area of Maryland. Again, a lot of those stations have parking facilities, and the majority of the crimes are vehicle-related in that particular case, with New Carrollton leading that as number one. Next slide. Virginia, again, most of those have parking facilities, and you'll see that most of the vehicle-related crimes are crimes against vehicles, pertaining to vehicles. And Deanna leads that with 55. Next slide. Again, looking across the board, the probability of being a victim of a Part 1 crime in the Metro Rail system is 2.79 per million customers. And at the last board meeting, we gave a depiction of all the jurisdictions as it related to the probability of being a victim of a crime throughout the jurisdictional areas. In 2008, the Metro Transit Police received approximately 55,000 calls for service, made over 1,600 arrests, issued a variety of criminal or civil citations to the tune of 5,700, and wrote approximately 2,600 fare evasion citations.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Zimmerman.
Chief, if we go to slide, well, it's 59 in the calendar year summary table for Part 1 crimes. We see 262 year-to-date vehicle thefts, and these are calendar years, so that's the year. Oh, no, it's only through November. I'm sorry.
Right.
The 2007 number, that's for the full 12 months?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so it's comparable over several years. Those are basically cars stolen out of parking lots?
Absolutely, cars stolen out.
So those are all parking lot related. If I looked at the larceny, 795 of them, what number of those were actually from vehicles parked in parking lots?
I don't have the exact percentage, but if I were to look at statistical reports,
it would probably be roughly 90 to 95%. 90-95%, you figure is what that is. If I looked at robberies, how many of them occur in the parking lots?
Very few robberies occurred in the parking lots. I can get you those statistics, but usually in the bus bay areas or in the stations. And again, this takes into account the expansion of the system as well as the increased ridership. So when you look at these numbers over the course of the last 5 years.
Sure, sure. I'm just, you know, with these, one of the things we don't have in the, when you do the rank by station, you divide it between vehicle and non-vehicle. On this table, it would be interesting to see how many of them, of these Part 1 crimes, actually take place parking facilities as opposed to somewhere else. Okay. It would be interesting in terms of that last statistic you gave to see the probability of being a victim of a crime, how different it is if you go to a parking facility as compared to when you never did, if you never do. And the other thing would be interesting is if there's any way to get any kind of data, perhaps, you know, your brethren's police business might have some way of getting at this, for other parking facilities, essentially. You know, we have large parking facilities all around the region. Some of them are on Metro.
Right.
And I think what you've seen, as you showed us this data over time, is that, you know, the parking lots are the real vulnerable areas to crime. We have pretty good monitored space that's fairly well designed throughout our system, and any crime is too much. But on the whole, it's pretty safe being on Metro City.
Absolutely.
Parking lots are real centers of vulnerability, and I suspect that that is true if I had statistics for shopping malls.
Absolutely.
But need number one, to be able to put this in perspective, and number two, then to be thinking about what are the best strategies for, you know, a particular crime, because I don't think we'd be showing very much crime if we didn't have parking lots of people.
And we will have that for the next presentations in the way that you requested.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Cato, have we turned off the heat in the room?
We are going to begin talking about budget soon in light of that. Actually, I have asked him to turn the heat back on.
Okay. Chief, I was out of the room. Have we talked about the Metro Rail Station crime?
Excuse me, sir.
Have we talked about Metro Rail Station crime by jurisdiction?
Yes, sir.
As you might know, I tend to look at the Maryland one a little bit more carefully than the others. And Silver Spring showed up for the very first time, I think, in this one. And it was due to vehicle crime, or so it appears to me. Since we have only one very small kiss and ride area, which I think right now isn't even operating, and no garages or parking areas that I'm aware of at Silver Spring, how did we get 14 vehicle crimes?
Can we go to that one on Maryland?
Okay. Just the last item, the column that says 14 vehicle crimes in Silver Spring.
Okay, so there was 13, so I'll have to get you that information on that.
It also doesn't add the 33.
Yeah.
There's a mistake somewhere, yes.
Yeah, it seemed curious that all of a sudden Silver Spring showed up on that list for something that didn't make sense.
We'll get you the answer today on that.
Okay, further discussion on public safety? Further discussion? All right, then. Thank you very much, Chief. We'll proceed now to the safety report.
Good morning. I share with you Metro safety statistics. You will begin with rail safety. Okay, thank you. For the fiscal year to date, all of our numbers are trending in a positive fashion, that is trending downward. Rail passenger injuries are down 56%. As well as the rail passenger injury rate. For the actual month of November, they were an 86% reduction in the number of rail passenger injuries and an 80% reduction in the injury rate for the month of November. Your number of fire and smoke incidents are down 17% and 60% respectively for the month of November. Next slide, if we go to the bus safety performance indicators, our numbers are holding steady at a reduction of 40% for the number of bus passenger injuries, and the bus passenger injury rate is down 45%. Also, for the month of November, our numbers are decreasing as well. Metro Access, once again, the numbers are going down. For the number of Metro Access passenger injuries, there's been a decrease of 25%. The actual collision rate has gone down 35%, and those are for the numbers year to date. The actual months from November to FYOA to FY09 are down 40% for the number of passenger injuries, and there's a reduction in of 51% for the passenger injury rate as well.
Good.
And that concludes it.
To the extent to which we're reducing, congratulations.
Thank you.
But you do bring one question to mind. What about our assaults on bus drivers? Where are we on that? That probably goes to Chief Tabor. Do we have the latest numbers on assaults on our bus drivers?
We do have that information relative to the assaults on the bus drivers, but I don't have it before you for right now.
We're always adding things to these reports, but I think because that issue has been the subject of very great concern, can we have that the next time?
Absolutely.
And in the interim, can you send it out?
Sure.
Okay. Is there further discussions, Mr. Zimmerman?
I just wanted to add my congratulations to yours. It's very gratifying to see the numbers moving in the right direction. At some point, I'd like to see them, relative to goals that were set.
Yes.
This is one of the major goals for this year. The board had to agree on. Progress on it, pretty pleased to see that. It's also important to note that these don't happen by accident. Wait, you're slow this morning.
It's cold.
This is the work of a lot of people, and we want to make sure. And they're not necessarily the people everybody sees all the time. Some of them are, and some of them aren't. And I know that there was an event that was going to be held in part to honor related to safety encompasses, and the economic climate today will have to hold that event, which I understand. But I think it's important that we don't forget and make sure we send the message to the people responsible for making significant improvements that we're seeing, the betterment of the safety of the people who work here and the people in the system, and make sure we acknowledge.
I'd like to thank you, too. You're right. It's our operators, our mechanics, our service workers, our train operators, and others who have really done an outstanding job in moving in this direction. And while the event on the 31st has been canceled, we will make the appropriate recognition of those employees, particularly the million-mile operators.
Okay. Further discussion? There being no further business to come before the committee, this meeting is adjourned at 11:04, and now we proceed.
I would suggest that we move directly to, given the hour, to the Finance Committee. And at this point, we have no paper at all for this meeting. Do we have any handouts?